You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. Welcome to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast. This is episode 26, and I have the privilege today of sitting down with one of my former work colleagues, Carissa Van Scooten.
Technically still a colleague.
Technically still a colleague, yes. We're just working for different branches now, which is great. I love the expansion here in Berlin. But Carissa Van Scooten, it's a privilege to have you here. Thanks for taking the time.
It's a treat. I'm glad to be here.
So why don't you start by introducing yourself a little bit and tell us who you are, more than just your name, and where you're from.
The name's the simplest part of that story.
Yeah, and what brought you to Berlin?
Carissa Van Scooten. It's not fair. You start off with these. I mean, I get that these are simple questions, sort of.
Theoretically.
So my parents, I grew up in a multicultural family, American, German, but raised in Taiwan. So it's a complicated question. Where am I from?
It is.
I was born in Southeast Asia and grew up predominantly there. But with passports that state that I am North European and North American. So I don't know where I'm from over.
You carry multiple passports?
Yes.
And you claim even
dual
more
citizenship.
Places as home?
Yeah, it's a hard question. How do you, when you're raised in one place, but your ethnicity, your family background, and what people see from the get-go identifies you as belonging to a different place. Mm. It's a tough question. Where are you from?
Yeah.
Tough to sort out for me myself, and tough for other people to sort out for themselves as well.
Most recently from before Berlin?
Before Berlin, most recently from the Chicago area. So I'd spent 9 out of the last 10 years before Berlin in the Midwest.
And a lot of that was education-based.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of that was education-based, and then later on also licensure, mm-hmm. work experience.
Licensure in marriage and family counseling.
Yeah.
And then kind of working to get that licensure.
Yeah.
Working with a church as well.
Mm-hmm.
Before you came here to Berlin.
Yeah, bivocational, part-time at a church, and then part-time building up the licensure hours.
And then I was part of the team that brought you here to Berlin. And even that process of getting you to Berlin was adding to the where am I from.
We had several conversations.
We did.
Leading up to that, yeah.
And then once you got here, we had you land and then pulled a surprise and said, hey, how would you like to go to Jordan to study Arabic?
I remember that conversation, yes.
Yeah. You were so gracious.
It was fun. I never thought I'd spend time in the Middle East. It was not on my bucket list, but it was an amazing opportunity.
And then you were geographically there in the middle, right as lockdown got started.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so your time in the Middle East is also very different than most people's time in the Middle East.
Truer words, Mike. I don't know. It was, a crazy experience, but I'm really grateful for it.
Carissa, with all of the transitions you've been through, even in just the last couple of years, and if we look at, and we don't have time maybe to look at the entire lifespan of transitions that you've been through, but from vacations in Germany, family things in Germany, mom who's German, living in Asia, studying in the U.S., going to Jordan for language study, now being in Berlin.
Mm-hmm. Nice zusammenfassung.
I do my best. But how do you take a look at that and say, all right, now Mike's going to ask me a question about what is a significant transition that you've experienced? Is there one that you would say, this one has been really shaping for me?
Yeah. I mean, the question kind of gets at transition experiences, right? There can be momentary experiences that happen in one single transition, but then also transition experiences that happen over a period of time. And I think there have been the one, if I had to pick one transition that really shaped me, I would have to say the transition to Hong Kong. When we moved from Taiwan to Hong Kong when I was 14. Because that, for me, up until that point, I considered myself Taiwanese, and I was dead set against, I had a plan and was going to spend the rest of my life in Taiwan because that was home.
And how many years had you been there?
I had been there my whole life. I was born there.
Okay.
And up until that point, the only years that I hadn't been there were the years when we would go back to the States every 4 years. And so the years that I had spent very, very interspersed with big chunks of time between them in the States. So I'd spent maybe three years in the States by that point.
Okay. Yeah. So also really wrestling this whole time with, I mean, you're finding a way, I'm going to be Taiwanese, I'm going to live here, but also growing up, discovering, wait a minute, I'm not,
right.
I'm not Asian.
Starting with feeling like I was Asian to the point where my dad reflects that I was not aware that I was white growing up.
Yeah.
To then realizing there's a degree to which my being Asian is something that I was going to have to fight for my entire life. And there's ways to advocate for that by living there your whole life or learning the language really well or, you know, different ways that you can engage in the culture. But all of that kind of shifted when we moved to Hong Kong because we moved away from Taiwan. And who am I if I don't live there?
Yeah.
Am I Taiwanese if I don't live there?
Yeah.
What is my identity? Where am I rooted? And so that would be the one moment. I think we're talking broader experiences, transition experiences that shaped me. I'd also have to include moving every year between 14 and 20 internationally. Mm-hmm. That has pretty formative impact. But it started with that move to Hong Kong.
I wonder if that's maybe hard for some of the listeners, especially in the U.S. or people who have spent most of their time in one culture to really understand. Because, I mean, in the U.S., it would be like saying, yes, my move from Wisconsin to Minnesota was so traumatic for me, where things are so similar.
Right, yeah.
And I think sometimes we make the mistake of saying, well, Asian is the same as another Asian, but that's really not the case.
No.
Even if languages were very similar.
Yeah.
What made that transition really challenging?
To Hong Kong?
Yeah, from Taiwan to Hong Kong.
I mean, at a very basic fundamental level, I had grown up in Taiwan. We had air raid drills at schools, going down into the bomb shelters to run air raid drills in case China ever bombed Taiwan. And so we grew up very aware of the fact that China had cannons aimed at Taiwan and kind of this intentionality. And we're living through that today again with the intensity in the Southeast, South China Sea's ramping up. I grew up very aware of that. It was kind of pervading everything. So when we moved to Hong Kong, we were moving, in my 14-year-old mind, to the enemy.
Yeah.
Which just, it does a number on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We moved to Hong Kong kind of in Hong Kong's heyday, I would say. Yeah. Kind of this, it was still in the one country, two systems, very separated. You would start to see some of China's influence coming in, but it was still separate. I only lived in Hong Kong for 1 year before opting out and going back for boarding school to Taiwan.
Okay.
So Hong Kong was more of a home base than home, per se, for me. My siblings experienced it differently.
So this was the transition for you that really started the what does home question?
Yeah. I mean, the question had been there before. I had wrestled. I mean, you have to wrestle with that when you grow up overseas anyway. But for me, this transition was the unmooring, the breaking of what had been my anchor. Once you're unmoored in the ocean, you have to find something else that anchors you.
And then you really did drift a lot for the next 9 years, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Especially geographically, I drifted.
Yeah.
Some of it was intentional. Some of it was then the consequences of intentional choices as it happens.
Each choice has other choices that need to
follow. The domino effect. For sure.
Maybe that leads to the next question. What's one of the most important risks you have taken?
Great question. How do you answer a question like that? When I was thinking through this, the one that came to me was kind of the most important, most significant turning point risks. So after college, I was one of the people who just, I was done with school. Mm-hmm. After high school, took a gap year. Mm-hmm. After college, took a gap year. So I had gotten a job working at a kindergarten in Southeast China, right across from Taiwan. Actually, I was trying to kind of knock on that door and see, is there a way to still go back and recapture that dream of working and living in Taiwan? Mm-hmm. That door had closed. So I was working at a kindergarten that was as close as possible to Taiwan and had signed a one-year contract, had great colleagues, was really having a really neat experience, work experience. And it turned out that the organization administration that I was working for had done some screwy administrative processing things, and they ended up letting me go 3 months after I started there.
3 months into a one-year contract.
Yeah. Yeah. So that left me kind of hanging, not really sure. It was after undergrad. I had gotten a degree in psychology, kind of with this awareness that I probably was going to end up going for more school. Not really excited at that prospect at the time. But also having looked forward to spending some time close to my family, who were still located in Hong Kong. And so trying to think through, what am I going to do now that I've been freed from a year-long contract 3 months in? And the opportunity came up to do an internship at a counseling center in Thailand. And I had traveled to Thailand before, but I'd never lived there. I'd never lived in a country or a culture where I didn't understand the language, because I could get around in China. And so that was one of those risks of, am I going to go to a place where I don't speak the language, to work with people that I sort of know but don't really know, as a single on my own in a completely new environment? And that actually jump-started this whole, family therapy, working with expats or people lost between cultures, and led to me then applying to grad school.
So that was a really important risk, because mm-hmm. it shaped things to come.
It did. Yeah, it was one of those falling into place moments. You know, those moments where you experience something and things just seem to settle, or you know it's right. Yeah. Makes me really grateful that they let me go after three months in into that contract. But at the time. Oh, goodness. At the time, I had to put together a timeline and sort through and track and process what was going on. Those 3 months working with that organization, and then there was a period of kind of, can we do this part-time and part-time English tutor and kind of patchwork something together? And some of, while a wonderful experience, I lived 10 minutes from the ocean, had great colleagues, other teachers were phenomenal. It was also the first time where I really experienced significant anxiety, I would say. And so after those months there, I also needed to get out. So it was a combination of visa issues as well as other things that just made it not viable to stay.
So how old were you then?
That was post-college. So I was 22, 23.
22, 23. Yeah. So 22, 23, single, knowing that you probably need more education to use the psychology mm-hmm. degree further, and thinking here's a year that's mm-hmm. filled and now it's not.
Right. What am I going to do?
Experiencing some mental health challenges that uh-huh. you had not experienced before. That really
largely also from the context. It wasn't so much from my from the year being set free. There were some contextual issues just with the situation. But yeah.
But still, that makes the decisions even bigger, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And how great that risk then really was one of those things where pieces came into place.
Yeah. Yeah, not something I take for granted. I'm very thankful.
It would have made the decision easier if you would have known the impact in advance. But we don't get that privilege, do we?
No, we don't. We only get to take things one step at a time. Which now earlier I would have probably said I want to know what's coming down the pipeline. I'm good. One step at a time is fine.
What about maybe a decision that you wish you didn't make?
I mean, the flippant answer would be I wish that I didn't choose to not practice piano as much following high school.
That would be the flippant answer?
Well, not flippant, but perhaps the lighter answer. It's hard to answer that question. My decision-making matrix for a really long time has been, of the options before me, what is the option I'm going to regret most if I don't make it? What is the question, like, fast forward a few years down the road, if I don't make this decision, will it be something that haunts me?
Mm-hmm.
And if it will, then you choose that option so it doesn't haunt you. And with that having been my decision-making framework and matrix, I don't know that there are a lot of decisions that I wish I hadn't made. And also, how do you go back and, like, in hindsight, to decide not to make a decision that you made at the time? The decisions that we make, we're making the best possible decision, given our context, given the information we have, given the framework, given where we are in that moment. In some ways, one could argue it's not possible to make a better decision than we made at that time. Unless we're knowingly choosing to not deal with something or knowingly.
Which
some people do.
But I think sometimes it's also true that we do receive more context, or we do receive more information. And then we go back and can say, oh, if I had only known.
Right.
Then I would have made
Which
a different
Which is dangerous
decision.
Because we're superimposing a self that of ourselves that is hopefully more mature, hopefully more aware. And placing the expectations of that more aware, more mature self on a younger self, which isn't fair to that younger self.
There are certainly times where I can say, the only reason I now know this information is because of the bad decision I made previously.
Yeah.
It put me in the place that I learned.
Learning
this
the domino effects and seeing what domino effects came as a result of those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Teaches you a lot about life and about yourself and about decisions even.
Yeah. But I also think it's maybe too far to say that people can't take some responsibility for bad decisions that they've made just because they more educated down the road, because there are certainly times in my life where I can say, thanks to the grace of God, they're not huge life impacting decisions, but there are certainly things that I can say, I could have decided better in that moment, or silly things like it would have been better for me to continue to play tennis, even though once I went from a small school to a big school, I no longer was a good tennis player in comparison to the other kids on the team. Me switching to track, for example, instead of sticking with tennis wasn't the greatest decision. But that's not something I can go back and say, boy, that was this life-impacting thing that I wish I hadn't made that decision.
Yeah.
But for some people, they are.
Yeah. No, for sure, the decisions we make, we still have responsibility for them, even if we're making them with the best information we have available at the time. I don't mean that to be a cop out
but
by
it's
any means.
But it is important to say there are times where we beat ourselves up.
Sure.
For decisions that we didn't make, that we couldn't have made.
Well, and I think that's really what gets at the heart of it is how do we look at decisions we make and take at face value the consequences, recognize at face value what that what resulted as or what came about as a result of those decisions that we made.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between looking at that at face value and just owning this is what happened, this is what came, I wish I could have done something different here, versus, oh, I should have known better.
Right.
Oh, I should have, you know, that the expectations and the lack of grace, maybe.
Yeah, especially if it locks us into this cycle where we've maybe made an unfortunate decision. And,
sure.
And now we're even beating ourselves up more for it when in reality that you didn't know the consequences of that at the time. You made a perfectly fine decision with all that you knew.
Right.
Based on the other side, like you said, you should have known better.
Right. And how do we take those decisions that we did make and move on from them, learn from them and move on from them rather than stay in this, oh, I should have done something different kind of cycle. It's easy to get stuck there.
Mm-hmm. At what level in that cycle is it okay to say, or is it appropriate to say, especially when it's true, I wish I didn't make that decision, without it becoming a self-blaming thing?
I think it depends on the person. Mm-hmm. You can say that depending on the person and how they're processing it through and whether they're able to say that, accept that, okay, they wish they made a different decision, but that's the decision that they made and that's the reality that they have to live with.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can move on from it, kind of that acknowledging and yet holding it with open hands and recognizing it could have been different, but this is what it is.
Yeah.
So let's make the most of what we have and make the best decisions that we can moving forward. Given what we now know, that depends on the person.
Yeah.
And the situation.
And maybe even where they are in processing that situation.
Absolutely.
Even if I could take your own life as an example, there might have been a time where right after your job got told, hey, this contract that was signed for a year isn't going to be fulfilled, that you might have at a moment said, I wish I had never come.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you did, but a person could.
Yeah.
And then,
for sure.
And then 2 years later say, that caused so many things to come into place that I am glad I made that decision, even though I wouldn't have chosen.
Sometimes it's hard in the moment to see how things will be redeemed or how things will play together and how it can make sense down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's the other part that makes it really hard to say what do you wish you hadn't chosen or what is a decision you maybe regret.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know what's going to happen down the road. I mean, I'm probably going to butcher it, but there's a story, I believe it's Chinese.
So Chris and I went back and forth a little bit about the story, and I've decided to record it here and to put a link in the show notes as well. And the story is Sai Wang Shi Ma, or Sai Wang Lost His Horse. An old Chinese farmer saved up small amounts of money over a year to buy a new horse. Just a day after the farmer bought the horse, it ran away. His neighbor expressed grief, but the farmer himself was calm. I hope you can get over this bad news, said the neighbor. Good news or bad news, can't say, replied the farmer. The next day, the horse returned to the farmer's house by itself and brought another stray horse with it. cheer up. We're going to multiply our farm income. That's great news, said the farmer's son. Good news or bad news? Can't say, replied the farmer, and carried on with his work. A week later, the farmer took the first horse to his farm, and his son took the second horse to follow his father to work. On the way, the second horse pushed the boy down and ran away. The boy's leg was fractured badly. That evening back home, the farmer's wife groaned. We will have to spend all our extra savings on our son's broken leg. What terrible news! Once again, the farmer replied, good news or bad news? Can't say. A month later, the farmer's king announced a war on the neighboring nation. Citing a lack of foot soldiers, the king ordered all able-bodied men in the nation to get drafted into the military without excuses. The farmer's son was spared because of his broken leg. Later, the inexperienced soldiers got slaughtered in the war. You are lucky that your son did not get drafted. Mine returned with severe injuries. Many have been handicapped or killed, complained the farmer's best friend. Unabashed, the farmer responded, good news or bad news? Can't say.
It's hard to say in the moment whether it's a blessing or a curse, or whether it's just a situation.
Yeah.
Tricky. So
it is.
Very,
and then
very
we
tricky.
Kind of live in this tension where we know that our decisions have impact.
Yeah. But what we don't, kind?
Yeah.
Where will they lead us, Mike?
Well, and so personality can play a role in that,
how
we interpret how much agency we have in our our own lives.
Yeah.
But a part of that also is not, for me, is not adapting a defeatist attitude that I have zero agency in my own life, and at the same time not becoming so arrogant to think that I have all the agency.
How do you stay in the middle of the tension without slipping off to either end of this, oh, well, I'm done. I can't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to survive. And on the other side, this I can control everything. Hyper anxiety, hyper.
Right.
And you can't. How do you stay in the tension?
It's not always easy.
No, I would argue that most of the time it's not easy.
I would agree with you. So this brings part one of our interview with Carissa Van Scooten to close. I'm Mike Piccinato, and I've been your host today on Unterwegs, the En Route podcast. And in the show notes, you'll find links to how you can email us, podcast@envisionberlin.com, or links to our Discord server and some other links that you might find helpful. Hope you join us again next week to hear part two of the interview with Carissa. Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of I Am Intercultural, a division of Exigent Communication, in partnership with Envision Berlin. Please like, share, and subscribe. Podcast music is by Mike Piccinato.